Good morning, friends. I want to recognize that there may be some people here joining us for the first time, or probably the first time in a long time in during our worship. So I would like to extend a warm invitation to all of you. It's so good to have you here. It's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing to be able to gather together virtually, worshiping together and experiencing Jesus together, even though we're not able to meet in person, which is more effective, of course, but time will tell. Chapter 2 to 3 recounts the life of a couple, Adam and Eve, in the Garden of Eden. And now we move on to chapter 4, whereas the setting occurs in outside of the Garden of Eden. As we begin chapter 4, we see now that the effects of what happened in the previous chapter is also continuing in chapter 4. Chapter 3, which Pastor Carla spoke on last week, you know, Adam, the choice that Adam made also led to what's happening in our particular passage for today in chapter 4. Now in chapter 3, we have the root of sin. And also in chapter 4, we have what's called the consequence of sin or the fruit of the sin. We are seeing now that the action of one man led to death and sin spreading throughout the world, throughout history, especially with Adam and Eve's children that we'll be reading today in our passage. And so sin spreading throughout the world, the broken world, the corrupt world, seems to be a continuous theme throughout the biblical history and even in our days today. And so it's a reality, you know, that in which we live in. Today we have a big portion from chapter 4, verses 1 to 16. So I'd like to welcome you, to encourage you to read along with me and follow along with me. Now, before we start, we have to dive into a little bit of a structure of the passage for today, from 1 to 16, since it's a very big portion. Verses 1 to 2 describes the birth of Cain and Abel. You know, Abel became a shepherd, and Cain became a cultivator of the ground, or a tailor of the ground, or a farmer of the ground. Verses 3 to 5a, Cain and Abel bring offerings, or some sort, or sacrifices, or in the context of worship. And so we see that we have two brothers, two individuals bringing in the presence of God, offering what they have to God. And then in verses 5b to 7, we see that the Lord's respond, the Lord's prerogative. He favors one offering or one sacrifice over the other. And so as a result of that, we read also in verse 8, Cain's response to the Lord's prerogative. And so, which is not a very good thing, of course, as we'll be reading in our passage today. And then ultimately, second and lastly, from verses 9 to 12, Cain's judgment or his curse as a result of what he does to his brother, as we'll be reading later on in our passage today. And then ultimately, verses 13 to 16 describes the Lord's gracious and his compassion toward Cain. And so I'd like to welcome you to turn with me to verses 1 to 2 of chapter 4. And we'll be reading from the NIV version here. Adam made love to his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man." Later she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. Verse 1 says that Adam made love to his wife. This is similar accounts, similar translation also, especially with the King James Version or even the ESV as well. We'll see that Adam knew his wife. This implies that there's some kind of a sexual relation between Adam and Eve. And also we read in verse 2, describes that Abel was a shepherd and Cain was a worker of the ground. So Abel was a shepherd and Cain was a farmer. Two different occupations, two different vocations. Cain means acquired, possession, gained, or brought forth, while Abel means breath. So we have two people being compared here in this particular passage and also elsewhere in the Bible. We read in Genesis chapter 25 about Jacob and Esau. Remember the story where they're evaluating the birthright. And also in Matthew chapter 7, Jesus refers to the two builders of the house. One building a house based on a solid foundation, you know, on a rock. And then one building a house on sand, which is temporary. Jesus talks about two men going up to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and one was a tax collector. Two men crucified next to Jesus. And also in Luke chapter 16, we read about two men who died and then met God, Lazarus and the beggar. And so the setting of this particular chapter comes through worship, right? We'll have two worshipers who happen to be brothers, Cain and Abel. And so let us read from verses 3 to 8 in chapter 4 today. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord, and Abel brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, and you must rule over it, or you must master it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out to the field." While they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother and killed him. Very tragic, right? The first ever crime ever committed by a human being in this particular passage, in this particular story here. In verses 2, we read that Cain was a cultivator of the ground, or a tiller of the ground, or a farmer of the ground, while Abel was the shepherd. And so we must ask ourselves, why out of these two people bringing forth in the presence of the Lord, offering the sacrifices through worship, why is Cain being rejected or refused? What is the reason behind his refusal? What is the reason why Cain, a God, seems to be showing favoritism over Cain and accepts Abel's offering instead? The Bible doesn't really seem to specify or indicate the reason behind it. So this continues to be, this kind of question seems to be a common theme throughout the scholars community, or even the commentators. You know, there seems to be disputes over this matter or this question. Some commentators believe that perhaps this particular event, a story, reflects a period of Israel's religion, which refers to the blood offering that God desired over the fruits offering that Cain brought to him. Cain brought the fruits because he was a farmer, or plants, while Abel brought the fat portion because he was a shepherd. Whatever it means, that this particular story shows us something beyond that. There's some other motive would have triggered, or would have been the reason why God would reject Cain's offering in the first place. We see a parallel between the vocation that Cain and Adam have. You know, in the previous chapter, we see that Adam has been divinely been appointed to take care of the garden. And so as well at the same time here, we see in the chapter 4 that Cain is also being assigned an occupation, a work to cultivate the ground, a farmer. So the offering itself wouldn't be likely be the reason why God would refuse Cain's offering, but rather something else. So out of this passage from verses 1 to 16, I would like to draw three simple points. And the first point being the types of worshipers from Genesis chapter 3, verses 3 to 5. The two types of worshipers, we have genuine worshipers, people who worship inwardly out of a pure motive, out of a pure heart from within here. And we also have another type of worshiper who worship outwardly based on the appearance, the outside appearance, or the pretense, pretending to be something you're not. We read in Hebrews 11, verse 4, "By faith Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith he was commended as righteous. When God spoke well of his offerings, and by faith Abel still speaks even though he's dead." Now the word offering from Cain and offering here refers to a Hebrew word called mincha, right? Mincha, it can mean any type of gift, or a gift given among brothers, or even to a king. So it could be anything here, it could be any type of gift. Our passage doesn't seem to commonly reflect on, doesn't have a common language of the Mosaic, you know, or sacrificial legislation. There seems to be no indication of whether this offering refers to the burnt offering, or the sin offering, the guilt offering, or the peace offering. We read in verses 3 to 4 that Cain did not bring the first fruits, but only brought some of his crop. Now know that here, Cain only brought some of his crop, while Abel brought all that he had, his best, right? The fat portions. The best of the animals. Abel brought all that he had with him. And then we can later read throughout the Old Testament that the theme of first fruits or the firstborn in Exodus 23 or even Exodus 13 or Deuteronomy 15, you know, those are very crucial. The firstborn, the theme of firstborn or first fruits are very crucial to the Lord. They are both reserved for God, for God's glory. And so we read that Israel is also described as the firstborn. Jesus is also described as the firstborn. And then the Levites, who are the priests, are also described as the substitutes of the firstborn. So we can definitely say that the firstborn and the firstfruits are crucial and are pleasing to the Lord. So it wasn't the offering which Cain brought that God rejected. It was his attitude, his action, his mindset. And we read in Hebrews 11:4 that Abel had faith, and so Cain lacked faith, unlike Abel. We read in verse 3, in the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. Now, in the course of time could refer to after a period of time, whatever it is, or it could be after a period of an agriculture year, you know, after farming season is over, the two brothers are gathering to offer their worship as part of a custom, or maybe as part of a tradition. We don't know. But we find that after a certain period of time that they offer, they come together, and the Cain brings some of his first fruits, or the fruits of the soil, as an offering to the Lord. He didn't bring all that he had. He only brought some of the fruits of the soil, while Abel brought all that he had, the best stuff, and we have presented to God with all his heart. So it encourages us to think, to ponder on this question. What kind of worshiper are we? What kind of worshiper are you? Are you a worshiper based on genuine heart? Or are you a worshiper based on pretense, on outward? So we learn here in this particular passage, in this particular portion, that worship actually does matter. And what we bring to God when we worship in the presence of the Lord does matter. How we worship does matter. It's not just about the outward stuff. It's not about the appearance. It's not just about the hand gestures. It's not about the praises and the singing, you know, from our lips. It's beyond that. And so worship ought to come from our hearts, as we learn from this particular portion. I wanted to share a little bit a story about the type of worshiper that I am. I used to be, actually. I used my life as a pretending or an outward worshiper, you could say in a sense, reflecting on the two worshipers that Cabon and Cain are in this particular story. Now, I used to be the type of person that would all feel like I got forced to go to the church or to Sunday school. I don't know if you've ever been that way, but when I was little, you know, I would often feel like that. The only reason why I would go to Sunday school or go to the church sometimes would be because I wanted to hang out with my friends and see them. I would be giving some kind of offering money by my parents. There would be times when I would be given two $10 bills to take to the church and to give as part of an offering. But when I look at the money that I have been given, it's a lot of money. At least that's how I saw it when I was little, back in the day. And now this actually took place in a refugee camp, in Melaun refugee camp, as some Korean people would know. I would only give a certain portion of what I had, what I was given, when the whole time I was told to give all that I had when I give offering to the Lord. Sometimes when we are about to give, we look at our wallet, we look at how much we have left, how much we can contribute, how much available, how much money, how much balance we have in our bank account. Now, this sermon is not just about offering, you know, about giving, But it's beyond that. When we think about worship, we think about praying, singing praises. But worship is more than that. But God desires for us is to offer ourselves, our whole being. He desires our whole being. And so we read in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 to 2, it says, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." So, friends, worship is not just about our offering, our tithe. It's every aspect of our lives, our attitude, our actions, our deeds, our mindsets, our emotions, our whole being. It's our relationship to God and to others. It's everything that we have. And that's what God desires. And so Cain, when he comes to the Lord with his wrong attitude, with a lack of faith, of course, God will have a different response. Abel's offering was accepted by God, while Cain's offering was rejected. And so this, of course, provoked him, right? The reality is that we often react to certain things based on our experience and based on our emotions. And so, of course, Cain became furious and angry at his brother, which brings us to the next point here. Second point is, in your anger, do not sin. Genesis chapter 4, verses 5b to 9. Now sin is simply a missing the mark or falling short of God's glory or falling short of God's standard. I want to share a little story about me and my brother. Now, me and my brother are almost a year and a half apart. And so he's my younger brother. So we don't have so much gap in between, right? There's not much gap in between our year. And so when we were growing up, some of you will relate to this, with siblings comes a lot of competitions and rivalry. And so when I was growing up, I would have a lot of competition with my brother based on who is capable of what and who is not capable of what, you know, who gets the better treatment or who doesn't get a better treatment from our family or our friends. So a lot of things was happening when we were little. I want to share a particular story of when one day in the camp, our uncle back in the day had a motorbike. And now motorbikes weren't really a common thing in the camp because, you know, we didn't really have access to a whole lot of technologies. And so let alone cars, we didn't even see cars even too. So motorbike was a big deal, was a big thing. So my uncle would come over and would offer to give us a ride. Every time that I would get my turn, to be sat on the motorbike, my brother would often get involved, get in the way, and it would be prioritized, you can say, in a sense. So he pretty much invaded my spot, pretty much. So of course that made me angry and anxious and envious of him because of how I was treated. So I became emotional about it. And the thing about me is that when I was emotional, when I was little, I often kept it quiet to myself, and I would just go to a quiet place and spend time on my own. So me being emotional about it and being sitting in a quiet place, you know, just being by myself, my mom caught me, of course, being emotional about something, which she wondered. She asked me what happened, to which I replied, "Oh, I just got bitten by a cockroach," because at the time, you know, cockroaches were a big problem for our family back in the day in the camp. So I made an excuse because I didn't want to get caught. Another incident happened in 2007 when my brother and I got into kind of a big argument and led into a fight as well. One of our Canadian friends from high school would come over to have a boxing type of fight or a match just for fun, just to play around, to practice. So first they have the boxing gloves on. So they come over to the apartments on 128th Street and 96. That's where all the Korean people used to live. So, you know, the good old memories. So they come over, our Canadian friend will come over and, you know, they started fighting. So me being the older brother, I was just minding my own business. All of a sudden they started fighting, things got out of control. things got off a turn to the point where they kept in dirty and started hitting each other. And then, you know, we live in a one-bedroom apartment, so our doors were broken. There were so many damages to our windows and all that stuff and our furniture. So I had to do what I had to do as a big brother, as a friend, you know. I was being kind of a peacekeeper kind of thing. So I got in between. And so as soon as I got in between them, trying to break them apart because I didn't want them continuing fighting, my brother accidentally punched me in the face, which kind of almost knocked me down because it was a big punch. I got so furious to the point where I couldn't control myself. I raised my arm, and you can see I punched him in the face with my knuckle because I didn't have my boxing glove on. So I punched him with my knuckles. Of course, that knocked him down, and he cried about it. And then I got reported to my mom, and I got in trouble for it. So you can see that the type of life that we live as brothers, siblings, is that there were so many competitions going on because of the anger that came inside of me that I couldn't control it at that particular time that I ended up hurting my brother. And we see this story evident in the story of Cain and Abel as well, right? Anger, when it gets the best of you, you can't control it. It's beyond our control. I want to share a story about also one of the classic good old movies from Lord of the Rings. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you tell me that you have never watched Lord of the Rings, or at least like have seen an episode of it. This was a classic, you know, a movie we watched. I would watch it repeatedly when I was little, back in the camp. Lord of the Rings, there was an episode of The Return of the King. Now, this story involves two cousins, or two relatives, as we say, Sméagol and Dagon. Now, Dagon finds this powerful and beautiful and precious ring in the mud. He picks it up in his palm. He looks at it with awe and smiles. Then comes his relative, his cousin, Sméagol, who ends up getting envious and jealous and selfish, and out of bitterness, asks him if he could have the ring for his birthday, because it was birthday, to which he obviously got refused by Dagon, because Dagon is the one who found it originally. Sméagol, out of bitterness and out of anger, ends up getting in a fight with Dagon, murdering him, choking him to death. So the ring has such a profound impact on him in his life, to the point where he kept hiding in the caves and, you know, everywhere, trying to protect this ring because he didn't want to anyone to see this ring, to the point where he ultimately became a creature called Gollum. So this ring had a profound impact on him, to the point where, out of jealousy, out of envy, out of anger, he ended up murdering one of his close friends and relatives. When I was little, before coming to Canada, I would often hear some parents would say, taking their anger out of their family, especially their kids. They would often get so angry at their kids that they would say something like, because of their kids, depending on their circumstances, would steal, would get hang out with the wrong crowd, would always get in a fight, you know, et cetera, et cetera, and the list goes on and on. They would often get so angry that they would end up cursing their children. When you grow up, you will end up in the streets. When you grow up, you will be a gangster. And when you grow up, you will be a prostitute because of the way you dress, how inappropriate. And the list goes on and on. I will often hear a whole lot of stories like this when I was growing up. And this had a profound impact on my life as well. I understand they want to discipline their kids. They want to show the good examples, right? They want to make sure that their kids walk the right path when they grow up. But later they realized that the words that they said also had a profound impact, the consequences on the kids. The Bible says in James and Proverbs that the tongue has the power to give life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. So whatever you say to your life, sometimes to your kids, you know, those words hurt as much as they hurt you when you were being hit physically. It's the same thing. We all get angry at times, friends. I do get angry at times too. Sometimes we find ourselves overwhelmed by circumstances based on our experiences, our circumstances, our situations. We get angry at our family. We get angry at the people who have wronged us in the past. Sometimes we overreact. So this is the reality in which we live in. Reflecting back on the story of Cain and Abel, God gave Cain a warning before he even killed his own brother. Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not what is right, if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it, or you must master it. Now, sin crouching at the door here, in the King James Version, it says, lies at the door. And it tends to depict a wild animal, especially a lion, crouching at the door, ready to pounce you, ready to attack you. So this is the type of imagery that that God is delivering to Cain. Now, this is the word picture about the attack of a sin. So the literal door, this is not a literal door. This is about the door. It refers to the heart of Cain. The sin is knocking at your door, at your heart. But your job is to subdue it, to control it, to master it. 1 Peter 5 verse 8 says, stay alert, watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. And so friends, this is what sin is like. The Apostle Paul also testified this, the same struggle that he has as well. In Romans chapter 7, verses 15 to 25, talks about, you know, my purpose, I don't want to do this, but my sinful desire, my sinful nature, my flesh goes ahead and does it anyway. I don't have any way of controlling it. I don't want to do it, but I do it anyway. And then he ultimately concludes that the only person that can help him to overcome this, to liberate him, is the power of Christ. So if Cain dealt rightly with his anger and his feelings, he probably wouldn't be in this situation either. Cain had a choice to make things right before things got worse, but he let his anger get the best of him. We then move on to the last portion of the passage, which describes God's response toward Cain and his first crime ever committed. The third point, God is gracious and compassionate in verses 10 to 16. Despite our circumstances, despite our this chaotic situation that Cain finds himself in, God still responds in a very loving way and gracious way. We see a dialogue between Cain and Abel here, where the Lord says, where is your brother Abel? To which Cain replied, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? Now the fact that Cain even responds to God this way seems to tell us that he shows no remorse, no regret, no shame, no guilt. We might ask ourselves. Because in the previous chapter, Adam was assigned, appointed to be the keeper of the garden, right, to keep it safe. Whereas here, the issue involves the responsibility of another human being, which Cain really had as a brother. His job was to care for Abel, his brother, but he did the opposite. Cain has polluted the ground with innocent blood, and so because of that, he's driven off from the parents, he got driven off from the ground, just like his parents got driven off from the garden. So as part of the curse, Cain the farmer no longer enjoys the fruit of the ground and becomes a wanderer, a homeless, everywhere he goes. Basically, he has nowhere else to go. Cain's curse is twofold. The ground will be cursed, and he will be a fugitive. People will kill him if they find him. He realizes that this punishment is too great, greater than his father, Adam, of course. And so we read in verses 13, 14, it says, my punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. So you're telling me that you just killed your own brother, and now you're asking for some kind of a justification or some kind of mercy just to get away from your crime that you just committed. In those days, also in chapter Genesis chapter 9 verse 6, it says, if anyone takes a human life, that person's life will also be taken by human hands. For God made human beings in his own image. So you and I are made in the image of God. So to hurt someone, to kill someone, is to basically, has a profound impact on God as well. Because God is our creator. So Cain, of course, appeals his case. You know, he appeals for mercy. He pleads for mercy. God responds in a very gracious and loving way. God declares that he will keep him safe. Those who find him will not kill him. And those who do, there will be vengeance seven times over. And so we also read on in the latter portion of the passage is that he also put a mark on Cain. Now, I don't really know what the mark is all about, what implication it has, whether it be a tattoo or a sign. I don't know what it is, honestly. But all I know is that Cain was shown mercy by God. If Cain's crime was committed in the days when Torah was being practiced, he would have been given a capital punishment or a death punishment. So even though he created a crime, you know, the first human to ever commit crime in history, God was still gracious to him. Sometimes we are bitter in life based on our overwhelming circumstances that we encounter. So we must reflect, we must ponder ourselves. So how does this whole passage from verses 1 to 16 relate to our lives? How similar is the story compared to ours, you and I? We could definitely say that we have the same kind of problems when it comes to worship, to a certain extent in the story. Worship problem, letting the root produce its fruit, basically letting go of our emotions, take the best of us, and then controlling us to the point where, in the case of Cain, is letting his anger resulting in murder of his brother. But if we are to be the followers of Christ Jesus, to be obedient to him, that God has made us to be, then we should reflect on the three points earlier that we mentioned. The types of worshipers. What kind of worshiper are you? Are you able worshiping from genuine heart, giving all that you have with your heart, your whole being? Or are you keen, giving a certain portion of what you have, offering based on the outward appearance? And the second one that we learn from the passage is that we're encouraged that in our anger that we do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Sometimes we overreact to the point where at that particular moment, we don't think too much about what the consequence might be, what the impact might have, our action might have on another person. And the third and lastly is God is gracious and compassionate, as he always is, and he always will be. At times it feels like we lose faith and self-control to be able to master our emotions. At times it feels like we lose hope because we are helpless on our own. At times it feels like hurting someone it seems to be the best feeling in the whole world because how we have been wronged in the past by that particular person. Friends, if we are to glorify God in our lives, we're encouraged to bring the best within us through worship, genuine worship, worship based on faith, worship with pure motive and pure heart, just like Abel did. If we are to glorify God, we are encouraged to ask the Holy Spirit to guide us, to continue to guide us to discern God's will, even in the times when we go through overwhelming circumstances where our emotions are on a roller coaster. We are encouraged to continue to live under the grace and compassion of God and to continue to show and share that grace and compassion to those around us as we continue to live to glorify God in obedience. So my hope is that we continue to reflect on where we are in life, what kind of worshiper are we, and to come into the presence of the Lord with humility, to surrender. It is a journey for every one of us, for you and I, to continue to worship and give everything that we have, our whole being, our attitudes, our actions, everything that we have in our lives. So may we continue to do so. And now I would like to invite Anna as she concludes in with a benediction for our service. So blessings, friends, and see you soon again.
Hi, Living Hope family. This is Anna, and I'll be delivering the benediction from Romans 12, 1 to 2. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Have a great week, everyone. Bye.